The battle of wizards and warriors continues with iron swords. The evil wizard Malkil will take the shape of the earth, wind, water, and fire. Farewell! The fate of the world is in your hands!
You're listening to the Piercing Wizard Podcast, and I'm your host, Ryan Ouellette. I'm a professional body piercer with 20 years experience. I travel around the world teaching technique and safety classes, and I'm a member of the Association of Professional Piercers. Listen in as I talk to my friends and colleagues about our industry so we can all stay sharp. So we are in Zaragoza, Spain. Is there a better pronunciation of that? You're the only one with some Spanish experience.
No, Zaragoza sounds right.
Zaragoza, Spain, for the APPE conference. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves?
My name's Lola Slider, and I am a regular co-host on the podcast with Ryan. I own Forest Piercing in Glasgow, Scotland, and it's my first time here teaching in Spain.
My name is Jeff Saunders. I co-own Gamma Piercing in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with a new shop on the way in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And this is also my first time teaching in Spain.
I'm Ryan, and I own a shop in New Hampshire, but that kind of rolls me a little bit into what I want to talk about as we get into the episodes, because the studios that the two of you own are not your first studios. So I wanted to talk about what it's like kind of transplanting. We've done a full episode, Jeff and I have done a full episode before, about what can go into building out a studio and planning it out, like your studio in Ann Arbor currently. We talked about a lot of your design elements and your planning for that, but there's another studio that you can update us on. You just spent what feels like an eternity opening up Forest 2 Electric Boogaloo in Glasgow. I've opened up three studios total, but I have zero plans to ever open another one again in my life. So we can get into that, but before we do, I want to do just a little bit of a recap, because today was day one of the conference. Tomorrow is day two of the conference. Jeff, you instructed today. How do you feel like it went?
Oh, fabulous. I got really good questions afterwards. I thought, you know, whenever you're teaching with a translator, that's always a little bit of a challenge. Like, did you make the class visual enough so that people understand what's on the slides? Did you write enough on the slides? A lot, you know, I don't want to talk too much about how the sausage is made, but in general, having a lot of text on the slides is frowned upon. Mm-hmm. But this particular class, I put a lot of text on the slides, so more of it was translated, so that if the translation wasn't great, then people would still get the meaning. That having been said, I thought the translation was really good, and I think the folks got the best of both worlds. Always a little bit of a challenge, you know, teaching material like this in a new environment, but it was super fun. Had a great time.
Yeah, I thought it went really well. Jorge did your translation. He'll be doing some of my translation tomorrow. And like I've instructed through translators before, and sometimes it can be a little bit challenging because like not only do you have to maintain your own cadence for your instructing style, your speaking style, but you have to make sure that you give them space to absorb what you're saying and then translate it in their mind and then give them space to kind of present it in their speaking style. And it can be really challenging, but I thought that you did really well, and I thought that Jorge did really, really well.
Yeah, top marks. I've also had the experience of a translator quitting in the middle of the class for me.
Right.
Yeah. So they all seem great in contrast to that. Not that I give that person a hard time. I think they were expecting something different than what they were presented with. Like, I'm still thankful to them for giving it a try, but wow, was that a challenging experience. So after that, they're all great.
I've been in some environments where it's been like really challenging because it's like a volunteer doing translation, and maybe it's their first time translating, and especially as an American speaker, sometimes you forget to slow it down. Sometimes you speak at your natural pace and it's like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And it kind of like, you know, for me, a native English speaker, and that's really the only language that I can speak fluently. Sometimes when I hear other languages, it baffles me at the speed in which people communicate. Like, Spanish can definitely be a language like that, where it sounds
extremely fast,
so fast to me. And I think that the American speaking style is also another very, very fast speaking style. So I'd imagine it's challenging.
It certainly can be. And I also think, you know, you're a lot of times when you attend a class, you just have the highest hopes for the speaker. And you just sort of assume that what they're doing is really easy. And the three of us know that you practice for hours and hours and hours, and you go there, and then you've got the technical issues, and then in the moment you come up with a new idea or whatever, and being able to communicate on the fly like that is very hard.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what it's like to hear the information maybe for the second time ever, translate it to a totally new language, and then express even a portion of what the instructor is doing.
Yeah. So, especially with like industry specific terms, American specific terms, American specific idioms, like it can all be very challenging.
Yeah. And I tried to divorce the class from that, and then, you know, my final line in the class was just like, nope, I got it wrong. It didn't translate well, and whatever, you know.
No, I thought everybody loved the class. It seemed to get a really good response.
I think a good sign as well was that when there were little turns of phrase that didn't come across, instead of letting you carry on, like people interrupted to help and offer their translation just to make sure that everyone really understood what was going on. And I thought it was a really good sign. People were really engaging with the class. Mm. That if you did say something that maybe there wasn't a direct translation for, or one that Jorge could think of, there were other people there to be like, that this is what he's saying, just to make sure that everybody was being included. And I did like the sense that people were engaged enough to be able to pick up on those little things and make sure that there wasn't stuff just kind of flying over everybody.
Yeah.
I thought that that was a really good sign.
I think one of the worst things as an instructor is when the room is dead silent.
Right.
Even when you put space out there for people to contribute or interact or ask questions or something like that. Like those moments where you're like, anybody have a question? And then it's just crickets chirping and you're like, oh, I didn't do a good job of preparing and presenting this class because no one is engaged and no one wants to talk about it. So, but anyway, is there anything else you would like to talk about in relation to today?
Well, Lola, was this your first time teaching through a translator?
I spoke through a translator on a Zoom class that I did a couple of years ago during COVID time, but this was the first time I've had a class fully translated, every slide translated with the text, and I did go through it and re-edit every slide to try and take out unnecessary text. And
it looked great, the presentation.
Keep it as simple as possible and then just alliterate from what was on the slide as simply as possible. And what I found beneficial of it was that it really helped me edit. I like going back and re-editing classes, and I can have a class I'm really happy with and then I'll go back and re-edit and be like, what was I thinking? This can go, that can go. So it's good to look at it with fresh eyes, but when you know that you're going to be working with an audience through a translator, it really makes you think, is this necessary? Is this as succinct as it could be?
Right.
And I think that it made it a better class overall for having reviewed it through that lens.
And you had Sala translate, which is really good translation in the presentation, like the slideshow, but also the class itself. I thought you did really well.
Lola, I loved your class. I found myself referencing your class a lot in my class, and I was just like, oh, wow. You know, Lola brought this up really eloquently, and I really enjoyed the Bridge class. I think it's an awesome class that you've developed.
Thank you. I'm doing it in Vegas this year.
Oh, amazing.
And I was a bit nervous about it, but having re-edited the class for this event, I feel a lot more confident in it. I mean, I've always been confident in it, but in terms of the delivery, I think it really helped me sharpen up the specific points exactly how I wanted so that it can't be misconstrued easily.
I mean, you would probably have a fairly unique connection to the perspective, but having a partner who's also massively talented in the same field that you work in, like before we were dating, I had my opinions on bridge piercings and I was very set in them. And I was like, nope, this is how I do a bridge piercing. This is how I do it. You know, I made a video and I was like, this is how a bridge piercing is done, so saith Ryan. And then I saw her class and I was like, oh shit, she does bridge piercings way better than I do. So now I just kind of like molded around that. And it's just like, well, I learned this and this and this from my girlfriend and she's awesome. So
yeah. She is me.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's you. Yeah. So anything else for today?
well, how are you feeling about teaching tomorrow, having watched how the classes went today? Do you feel more confident or more nervous?
No, I think it'll be awesome because I don't have a slideshow like the two of you. So like I'm very much ready. Like I've done safe practices in like lots of countries around the world through lots of translators into lots of different languages. So I'm really comfortable teaching safe practices specifically. I have all the materials I want, and it seems like a really good attendee base. And you know, Jorge seems to do an excellent job with translation. So I'm really excited for it. It's one of those classes where I think sometimes in Vegas it can get overlooked. Like the people who sign up for it, come to the class, tend to usually really like the class and really engage with the class. But I worry that sometimes people skip over the class because they're like, well, I already know how to put gloves on. But like every single time I do the class, I can see the light bulbs going off over people's heads, because it's not like you're going to get an hour and a half of life and career changing information. But if you can pick up one little extra thing to do cleaner or safer, I always absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I think there's another great aspect of your class that it, even if it's not new, sometimes knowing that the thing you've been doing is accepted safe is just really reassuring. Mm-hmm. I think people get a lot out of like, you know what? I didn't learn a ton of brand new things in this class, but thank goodness, right? I'm now more confident in what I've been producing at the shop, and I had somebody I really respect and trust say, oh yeah, this is what I've been doing.
And then also Ryan said it.
There are also instances where people have been doing the right thing but maybe don't understand why. So you know, they might have learned, had information passed down to them and operated a certain way. They're learning how to do something, but they don't actually recognize the significance of it, which is important, especially if you're wanting to pass that information on, because if someone turns to you and says, well, why do we do it this way, it's good to have an answer.
Well, great. I'm a saint, is what you're saying. So you're welcome. So moving on from day one, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about day two as conference goes on, but something that the schedule in your mind of how you make your content, like you've been making a lot of really great content for Patreon also, patreon.com/piercingnerd. And I basically like, I record a catalog of videos. I record whatever interesting things I can get in the shop when I can get them. And then they go in an archive. And then each month that comes up, I'm like, what should I make a video on? What do I have content captured for? And one that I started working on now was a forward helix video showing one example of a double forward helix and one example of a triple forward helix. So when I started putting that together, I was like, well, I have to have Chrissy's photo. I have to have that black and gray Chrissy Scholl triple forward helix, because like that changed the entire industry and she deserves 100% of the credit for that style. So I contacted her and I was like, hey, would it be all right? Do I have your permission to use this photo? And she was like, oh yeah, you know, it's funny. I just talked to Jeff. He's working on some forward helix stuff and he wanted to use the photo also. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to fuck myself. No, but it was one of those things where I was like, of course Jeff thought of it, because like he's smart, you know? So you recently put together some content for forward helixes, and did you say that was driven by kind of more of a direct need for wanting to give stuff to your staff?
Yes. So one of the chief differences between our Patreons, two very different Patreons, you do a lot of video content, you do a lot of this is how I do a piercing content, and my stuff tends to be a little bit more, first, it's usually written. I have a little bit of a podcast element, but it's not nearly as good as Piercing Wizard. And I don't do as much video, and I certainly don't put the kind of effort that you do it. So if someone were to come from your content to mine, they will be, I think, probably a little disappointed.
I wouldn't use the word disappointed, but I would say that you come from an your education presentation is more academic than mine.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Jeff makes words good.
Yeah.
And it's funny because anytime I actually like involve an editor, they make words very good. I've had a few people edit me, and I'm like, oh wow, this is amazing. But no, the reason I did four helixes was because I found myself in a position where I had three different piercers at my shop that weren't really comfortable offering four helix piercings. Just like, well, if I've got to teach three of you these, this seems like an opportunity to actually make an entire advanced fundamentals class, which I've got, you know, the beats of each class basically laid out where I know exactly how to write a class about a specific piercing now. And I'm just like, well, I can do that for them and I can make it available to my Patreon as a sort of a thank you for being there. What I don't want people to do is get the impression that that's where the Patreon's going. It's not. It's mostly going to be me ranting about Q-tips and steel, right? You may occasionally get a class on how to do a piercing, but if people want mostly that, they should go to yours.
I agree. Come to mind. So when you say that they're not comfortable with forward helixes, are you talking about a single? Are you talking about those multiples? Or are you talking about just forward helixes in general?
In general, so one of the things we really operate based on the APP apprenticeship guideline and curriculum. And one of those things where, like, if we haven't signed off on a piercing for you, then we don't let you do it. You don't have to get that far into them, you know, 5 or 10, but we do want you to have those 5 or 10. And for whatever reason, I have someone that's segueing from apprentice to piercer right now. Her name's Maddie, and they're primarily Nathaniel Tinker's apprentice, but Maddie hasn't had a chance to do a ton of forward helix piercings, so she's knocking those out. And then I had a couple other folks that were just like, okay, you know, a very new apprentice. Okay, what are forward helix is about? And then an existing piercer who became a piercer during COVID. So there was just like weird gaps,
yeah.
Right? And it's funny because I probably have her do a forward helix on me before I'd have, like, you know, just about anyone else. I'm totally confident in her ability, but she's just like, we haven't done the five. So she's like, here's an opportunity to make some material. I got to interview Chrissy Schull, which was cool. It turns out we're going to the same concert in Las Vegas next week. So cool.
Who is it?
It's this giant nu metal fest because nu metal rules. Okay. And I want to see, okay, Slipknot.
I'll take your word for it. I used to go see Slipknot like around when their first album came out, and like Limp Bizkit and all that stuff. So it's like, yes, okay, I get it. Like 20-year-old Ryan would probably love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just turns out that 46-year-old Jeff still loves it.
I pierced your forward helix. Was that the first time that you came to visit?
I think so.
Yeah, like that was a fun one.
For Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and it was nice to do your forward helix. And it's still there, your ear didn't fall off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. We recorded a video. Was it you piercing Jordan?
No, I think it was Jordan filming me pierce a client.
Right. Okay, that makes more sense. Well, we did a video for my Patreon.
Maybe it was me piercing Jordan.
I think it was. I think I recorded it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Because yeah. I was like, someone else must have been there, and it's just the two of us there. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we published that, I think, sometime last year. So that's available. If people are already on my Patreon, Ryan PBA, you can check out that one. And then they'll have the double and the triple probably within the next couple of weeks. But what was your experience like that, trying to kind of talk to other piercers about how you do forward helixes? Like, what was like one of the more important bits that you wanted to tell them?
Well, I do my forward helix piercings primarily with cotton buds now. And it's just my favorite. I love it. I just love it. I love little disposable things like that in the studio. And
when you say cotton buds, I don't want you to minimize it too much, because I don't want people to just imagine a paper stick Q-tip in their mind. Like, you use like a really specific one. It's a wooden stick cotton applicator.
A one-sided sterile wooden.
And the cotton bud is much stiffer than, and it's less fluffy.
Yeah, it's not fluffy.
Yeah, than a Q-tip. But I've started using those also because, like, you can use them for back pressure, but also it's like partially for a capping device.
I just love them. I think that there's more of a trend now of moving away from those little kind of you know, piercing hack type things as more products become available on the market.
Which like little DIY.
Yeah, like DIY. I love DIY stuff. And I think that as more products come on the market to make that stuff not as necessary, I don't think that's a bad thing. But I really like doing it. Like I don't, you know, I might have done it before as a necessity, and now I think I do it as a preference. But I like knowing that if I had to wind up piercing somewhere with a completely different setup for me, I could make it work somehow. I like having that little Rolodex of information in my head. So I like being able to do forward helixes a bunch of different ways. But my most favorite technique that I've settled on is piercing into cotton buds.
My most favorite technique, but I don't bust it out for all of them, certainly, is piercing it from the back to the front with a fish hook needle.
I did that for years, and it was, for the majority of the time, successful, but there would just be the occasional inconsistent result with it.
And my most common problem was getting it way too deep on the interior. Did you ever do those?
It has never once made sense to me.
Okay.
Right. I think I have tried it. I've never been a fish hook person for tragus or for forward helix. And I think, and I made a point in my class, it's not to say that I think that's wrong. It's more of a limit of my imagination in some way, shape, or form. I just cannot grasp it.
It's really easy to overshoot your entry point because you can't usually clearly see it. A lot of it is by feel.
Okay.
And it's also super easy to distort the tissue and end up getting like a really bad angle or get misaligned tissue layers.
Yeah.
A lot of moving parts.
That would be the problem that I had. I would find that the piercing, I would think that I'd nailed it and I'd hit my marks, but you have that pinning of tissue where when everything is released, you can see that there's excess surface tissue that's being pinned in an unnatural way. Because of distortion, piercing back to front. And it would be the case that like 9 times out of 10, it would be brilliant and it's really easy for transferring. And I did it that way for a really long time. And then I can't remember why I started using the cotton buds for back pressure. I think it's because I was using them for doth piercings, which is something else I love to do with cotton sticks.
I do not. I tried to copy your method for that, and I should not do that again.
I love it. It's my favorite way of doing them. And I think I just thought, well, I could just probably do this with a forward helix as well. And I started doing that. And I find that it's a lot more comfortable for the client than using something like a blanker receiving tube because you don't have that metal or glass rim.
And you don't pressing have to distort the tissue as much either.
And I also enjoy the fact that you can, like you say, sort of cap the needle in a sense by piercing into the cotton bud. You can actually use the cotton bud handle just to help guide everything out so you're not having to put your hand anywhere near a contaminated sharp, especially if it's a needle that's been bent, which can be unpredictable in the way that it moves sometimes.
What's your magic? Because I know that you're very disposable. Are you like a DIY put it together tool, or are you like a receiving tube person? Or
no, so I use the periscope receiving tube made out of a needle blank, and that's the technique that I prefer the most. The way I use the cotton swabs is slightly different. I'll take two, and I'll use the make sort of like chopsticks with them, use the wood side of that as pressure on the back. And I kind of, this is the sort of thing that I love, because here you guys are producing like a video about it, and it's like the technique that I would have not thought of, and B, definitely did not explain at all. So and I like, there are times where I have pierced into the Q-tip for other piercings. So I really like that approach. I think I'm going to definitely try that.
I was doing cotton sticks for a long time for conch piercings. I was using two of them with the cotton applicator end, and I was basically replacing my fingers like I was doing like a blind exit. But I won't use my fingers for a blind exit. It's just I find that to be super irresponsible, just to say it like on the podcast. So I was replacing my fingers with the two wooden stick, not paper stick, so they didn't just bend. And I was using that and piercing between the cotton buds, and then I would take the cotton bud off and then cap with one of them. But I was capping with a cotton stick on a cotton bud on a handle, so I wasn't putting myself at risk, like driving a cork onto a needle or something. So, but seeing the way that you do it, finding something kind of like different in the middle or something like that, like that's why I think it's really fun to talk about this kind of stuff, because it's like three correct ways to do it. And I think sometimes when you teach a class or you make content or material, if it doesn't click or resonate for the person, I don't see that as like very beneficial. And it doesn't mean that like I failed, you failed, you failed, or whatever. It's just like, well, there's more than one right way to do it. So it's like, if my way doesn't click for you, try Lola's. If Lola's way doesn't click for you, try Jeff's. If Jeff's way doesn't click for you, try me, you know, whatever. And one of them maybe will resonate for a person.
I'd be surprised if at least one didn't work.
You know what, like, I'm really looking forward to future generations and like the upcoming generations of piercers, especially the upcoming generations of educators, because like I want to learn and I want to see new things, because like I'm voracious for that. Like, I'm not stubborn with it either. If I see somebody do something and it clicks and it makes more sense than the way I'm doing it, it's like, okay, well, I just, that's the new way I'm going to do it when I go to back to my studio. Like, that's one of my favorite things about being able to travel and get the opportunities I have, because I get to see all the best ideas from everywhere in the world and then just pick the one that I want to use in the studio.
I remember the first kind of like forward helix hack type thing that I did over 10 years ago. There weren't nearly the same amount of tools available on the UK market as there are now, so you were kind of a little bit stuck with what you had. Large sponge clamps, regular Penningtons, that sort of thing. And when I started doing forward helix piercings, a lot of the time Pennington clamps would be too big. They wouldn't fit into the space. And I was like, I need something smaller. So I would get like a little pair of just regular hemostats. And I'd be like, if I could just have these open a tiny bit, that would be good. But then they're, you know, I can't like, there's no way for me to do that without holding them really still with this hand. So I would like clamp a cotton bud head in between it and then close them, but it would leave a little bit of a gap because they couldn't close because the cotton bud head would hold them open. And then I would like, you know, have MacGyvered myself.
I like pierced my tragus that way when I was like 17 in my bedroom, and I accidentally stabbed myself in the conch because there was no backstop. I could pierce between, but you know, I couldn't visually see what was going on.
So I think that's the first kind of thing that I tried to do to think like, this isn't working, this isn't like meeting my needs. I always think it's really fun to explore those little creative thoughts in your brain where you're using a tool and thinking, this doesn't seem to be doing what it's meant to be doing.
The main thing that I was using before I started transitioning into the cotton bud kind of thing, not that I use them for 100%, but I use them really often, I was buying metal pimple poppers, you know, blackhead expression tools on Amazon, and I was using just like a little pimple popper behind the forward helix's back pressure piercing, and then just like using it to kind of like move the needle out. And I got that idea from Sala and Christiana at Pinpoint, because they were actually using like steel paper clips that they could like put through their statum, and they were using that for back pressure. And I tried that for years, but I was bending them too often because the American version was too cheap and too bendy.
Right.
So that's when I started using the pimple popper tools. Any other little forward helix bits you want to talk about?
I just thought it was really cool that Chrissy Schull was so giving of her time and like it was just enthusiastic, like, okay, I used the picture, I'm excited to talk about it, right? There was no sense of like, oh my god, I'm so sick of talking about that. So I thought to her credit, she was just like, yeah, absolutely, I mean, how can I help? So
yeah,
kudos to her.
Yeah, I got her years ago through Forum Life. I got her as like a secret Santa one year for like piercer trade gifts, and I sent her just like a Photoshop picture of like a hand holding a phone with that picture on it, because I think we had all seen that like 1,000 times, especially when that was the big trend. Everybody would come in with that exact photo on their phone, that famous black and white photo, and be like, I want this. Have you ever done this before? And it's like, oh no, I've never seen that before. I definitely haven't done that 100 times. Let's do that. anything else you would like to talk about for forward helixes?
Just that I think that multiples on the forward helix are sometimes overreaching for a lot of people's anatomy. And I think that sometimes for a less experienced piercer, and certainly in my case when I started piercing, you would look at a type of anatomy and you maybe wouldn't have enough experience to know what's going to be overcrowding. And you would think, yeah, we can fit 2 or 3 in here, but it doesn't mean it's going to look good or have lots of nice jewelry options. I mean, maybe if you're just wanting to wear like 2 mil bezel set gems forever in each of them, maybe then it can work. But now I just try and think about what the jewelry options are going to be for the pieces and speak to clients about that, because a lot of the time they don't understand the size constraints and the limitations that are going to be imposed on what they can wear, packing so much into a tiny space.
Yeah, and especially with the backings.
I probably turn down now more than ever, because I want things to heal well. And if something doesn't look like, I don't know if there's like a, you know, like a green, amber, red, or some kind of like hot to cold system when you look at something, you know, some things are a bit more high risk or a bit more low risk. I definitely just try and stick to work now where I'm like, I feel extremely confident that this can heal well, because I just want things to heal well for my clients.
Yeah, I'm like that with a lot of stuff now. The reason I can kind of eyeball someone's ear and have that opinion of like, this isn't a good idea, you have a great ear for a double, but let's not try to push it with that third, was because when it was like that huge peak, do you have a good sense, I mean, you wrote the article, do you have a good sense of when like the 444 Helix boom was?
I want to say it was just about 2012-ish.
So.
Ish. You know, Chrissy, you could give me more feedback on that, but I actually, when I was writing it, there were no 444 Helixes that weren't with rings before 2012, and then 2013, 2014, every piercing was a 444 Helix. Mm. So I want to say it's about them.
Okay. Well, through that boom, like, you know, I'll completely admit that I did plenty of triples on ears that probably shouldn't have gotten triples because so many people were asking, and I was just so enthusiastic about wanting to try it. So, you know, did some, not all of them healed great. I think any piercer should probably admit when, like, you know, they do stuff like that. But now I look at an ear and it's like, well, let's just do two or let's just do one because this is why. And I think people appreciate it when you can take maybe those reference photos of their ear and be like, well, this is why. Look at the back of it. You know, this is whatever. You don't have space here for backings or all that stuff. You don't want to force it. So if you're looking for more information about Forward Helixes, you can see Jeff's great content, Advanced Fundamentals of Forward Helix.
Yes, and it's on the Patreon, patreon.com/piercingnerd. You have to be an implant grade steel level member.
Okay. I'll get around to finishing my video. It might potentially publish in April, but if not, it will publish sometime in May of 2024. So I look forward to getting that online. Do you two want to talk shop things, or will that make you go bananas in the evening?
No.
Okay.
I'm always excited to talk about whatever.
Well, so you're still in it, both feet in it all the way. You are just kind of stepping out of it. Mm. Like, how long has it been since you've officially opened in Forest 2?
We opened, I think, the first week of February, so 2 months. Yeah. And just about a week and a half since I officially was released from the other property.
Yeah. So do you feel like you've gotten comfortable in the new space yet, or are you still finding things that you want to tweak?
Well, there were some issues during getting the shop open that came up that haven't been fully resolved. So I still don't feel completely happy with the space. But it's working. Like, we're seeing clients, we're doing everything that we need to do, and I think as long as I can keep working, everything else I can work on.
To ask you, and like, you only answer within your comfort zone, but like, are you in the phase where you're like pulling your hair out, or you're moving forward with enthusiasm, or somewhere in the middle?
So one of the big differences, because I've done what Lola did, which was, you know, change spaces and have it be your solo space. And that is a special kind of anxiety because the new place has to work, right? The income just dies if you don't have that. This additional space thing, this is the second time I've done an additional space. It's a different kind of worry.
So when you say that, just to clarify it, you're going to have more than one Gamma Studio open and operating.
Correct.
You're not building the new one to close the old one and move on like a hermit crab.
Exactly. Ann Arbor will stick around, and now Milwaukee will be the new place. And there's just different things involved, because the last time I did this, it was the same employees. We were just, there's going to be one day where we segued to the new place. This is different, right? The new employees at the new place, transitioning those folks from Ann Arbor to Milwaukee, which is a big move for them. There's family involved, that sort of thing. Hiring new people for Ann Arbor, handling jewelry orders for two shops when you only have the income for one shop. There's a lot moving right now, and I have allowed myself not to get into the pulling my hair out thing. I've been pretty zen about it. Talk to me in August, it might be a totally different story.
Yeah, I looked into opening a second studio because, you know, New Hampshire is a tall state, and Nashua is not like, believe it or not, Nashua, New Hampshire is not a hotbed for body art. So I was thinking maybe a satellite studio in more of a college town kind of a thing, because I had seen so many friends like have great success being in a college town kind of environment. And I looked into it for a very short period of time, and I said, like, I know that I cannot handle it as a business person. The way I run a business, I'm a micromanager, so it's not something where I could have done it. So more power to you for you know, being able to do that and not go insane with it, because I don't think I'd be able to do it.
There was a lot went right. I had two people that were Nathaniel Tinker and Carrie Lee, who are superb piercers and are Wisconsin natives, and were really forthcoming with me. Just like, hey Jeff, you know, you've got us on loan, but we have to get home at some point, because their families really mean a lot to them, and I totally understand that. So, you know, it came to the point where she's like, well, either we go to Wisconsin and build our own shop, or maybe there's some way we can continue to work together. And they were amenable to it. And I think, you know, that going right is a big part of it. And then also having a team in Ann Arbor that I just think is spectacular, and I'm just so inspired by all the time, having people ready to transition from apprentice to piercer. You know, a lot went right to make me more comfortable with it than I would be otherwise.
Yeah. So with you having a little bit of hindsight, and I'm speaking to Lola, so what would you say were the one or two, other than the potpourri random things that were completely out of your control that came up, what were some of, like, what were your one or two or three most challenging factors in the new studio?
I think just it was a lot harder than I had expected. When I opened up the studio the first time in the first location, I had no resources, no money. Somehow managed to pull it together, and then 3 months later everything shut down because of COVID. That was a lot of hardship, and over that 4 year period I learned a lot of stuff about how I could have set the business up a little bit easier and a little bit less financially damaging to myself. So going into it the second time, I had a much more robust plan. I had a successful business that had been doing better year after year. I had a far better idea of what I was doing and a far better idea of the hidden costs. And I was like, I've got this time. And for whatever reason, things just turned to shit. Like I had a plan A and a plan B and a plan C and a plan D for everything. And it's like, I mean, you were there for the entire process, so we don't need to get into it. But every plan just got...
But getting down to like plan H.
Yeah, it's like you can't have... If you're like me and you don't have resources, you don't have like a wealth pool to pull from, and you don't... Like, I don't even drive. I don't even have a car. You know, like if you have that little resources going for you, you can't just have one good idea. You need to be a good idea factory. Every day there's something else and you need to be like, I have to come up with an idea for this today. And it's that for months. So I think that I was just surprised, because I really genuinely felt optimistic going into it. And I'm really proud to have managed to kind of complete the transition process. So I think that that's why I don't feel 100% relaxed, because it was 8 months of, okay, you need another good idea. You need another good idea. You have to be able to, you know, think of something to deal with this. So when you do that for 8 months, it definitely puts you on edge. I think it'll take me a while to feel completely settled, but we're there, we're open, we're working. And fortunately there were enough letters in the alphabet for me to just keep coming up with plans.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of it, and it was it was really difficult to go from maybe like, you know, one evening when I put you to bed, your enthusiasm would be high because everything went okay that day. And then the next day, with our time difference, I would wake up to you telling me a message of how your plan A, B, C, D were like shattered because of like one thing that was out of your control. And it was just, it was really difficult to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the things that as an American, like if I was just having a conversation with you or another American and you would have that instinct of like, well, surely they can't do that because of this, and be like, that's a completely different country. You can't just like imagine that you can wave a wand and like, you know, get out of something that's a completely different regulation or a completely different set of circumstances like that, you know, you don't live in.
Right. So the reality of it is sometimes shit happens that's just not fair.
Yeah.
And you can be sad about it for a couple of hours, but then it's like, okay, well, we need a new plan because that plan's gone now.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to talk about it and not be negative, because I don't want it to just be negative, but I would be lying to say that it wasn't the hardest thing. Like, I would never open a shop again. This is the last time I'm ever going to do it. I did it. And I just couldn't put myself through that again after this time round. So I feel really proud of it, but it's also the last time I think I would go through with it.
Yeah, it seemed challenging. How many studios have you opened at this point, Jeff? Five?
This will be... Yeah, five.
Five. Ugh. You know, I've done three, but I've been very fortunate. I've been more than very fortunate. All three of my studios have been within one block of each other. So it's like when I was doing construction, I could walk across the street to check up on something, and really easy to move things and really easy to like, you know, plan and allocate resources and all that stuff.
So this is just one tiny example of the many, many examples of why I had to move and why the move was stressful. The city dug up the entire street outside my shop. And when I say the entire street, I mean the entire street.
Yeah, right up to your door, literally.
Right
up
to the door, tiles off the front of the shop and everything. And the project is still going on now. And it was a project that lasted over a year. And the city gave us 4 or 5 days notice that it would be happening.
Oh,
so the entire street's gone. And when I say the street's gone, I mean that you couldn't pull up a car because there's no street.
You couldn't ride a bike down it because it's just a mountain of rubble in front of her door.
When it came to us moving out, that in itself was a challenge because there's nowhere for movers to drive to. So me and my apprentice Jordan had to carry our large furniture items because there was no way to get anything onto the street to get stuff out.
Yeah.
I remember having to practically have a fight with one of the construction workers who didn't want to give me access, and I was like, that's my building, I'm having access. And they were like, well, the road's dug up. And then I just had to be like, well, then you shouldn't have dug up the road, you should have left the path. And we just, and like it really got to the point where it was like having to argue with construction people to just get into the property to like move my possessions out of it while still paying full rent, while still paying full tax on the property. And it's like stuff like that, it's so ridiculous to even think about. You're like, we can't even have movers come in and out because there is nowhere for the movers to be.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to spiral too far because I think it could be very easy. I want to focus on the positivity because like your new studio is gorgeous. I love it. I think like it feels a lot more like Forest than the last Forest felt, if that makes sense.
Well, this was a complete build out. You know, the other business was retrofitted into an existing structure. So it was really just making the best of what was there. So I think that the difference will probably just be that there's a bit more design that's gone into the new space than could have gone into the old one.
And yeah, you know, you have all those years of experience of knowing what worked and what didn't work as well as you'd want it to in the previous studio. Do you have anything for your studio now that falls into like wish list? The things that like the four previous studios, you were like, oh man, I really want to have this in the new one.
No, so the current studio in Ann Arbor is the first one that I've really loved.
The Dream Shop.
Yeah, we had the investment money and I was fully in charge, right? In the past, I've always had a business partner. And I do have a business partner, my wife's a business partner in the Ann Arbor store and the Milwaukee store. But It's a lot different when it's your partner versus when it's a partner, right? You know? So that's not knocking on my previous partner. He was great. He just, you know, he had
They'll have their own financial interests.
Exactly. So for me, it was just like, I really want to spend a design. The people that we got for our architects really saw something that I couldn't have seen myself, which is really nice, where you're like, oh wow, I am surprised by how nice this looks. That feels really good, right? Because a lot of times you have something in your head and then you make it or you hire people to make it and it's not quite what you had in mind. This was different. I didn't have anything in my head. I had hopes and they exceeded those expectations. So we'll see if they can manage to do that for Milwaukee as well, because I hired the same folks. And one of the challenges of, it's different than it is in Scotland, but this happens quite a bit, I think, in the US, is that if you're doing a piercing-only studio and you're doing a disposable, the Department of Health really struggles with what that means. Mm-hmm. Because they just don't understand why you need a sterilizer still. They're just like, if you have a sterilizer, you need an ultrasonic in a dirty room. And you're just like, no. It's a different thing. We're not doing any dirty tools. Yeah. And they just really struggle with that. So that's the struggle I'm having.
I remember Taki Edwards told me that when she was operating around the Atlanta area, all disposable, and she really wanted to get a statum. And they were like, you can't have a statum because you need to prove that you're disposing of the needles and the tattoo tubes and stuff being used in the studio. If you're disposable only, you can't have, it wasn't even a you shouldn't, it was like you can't have an autoclave because then, yes, you need the X, Y, and Z that we see as necessary to use an autoclave. So they also just didn't understand it, and it melted my brain, the logic that goes into that thought process.
Right. For me, years of working with different departments of health, different legislation and stuff like that, is that a lot of the people that are tasked with enforcing body art rules are food inspectors, right?
Or hair.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So when they have a list of things that was made in 1996 for tattoo shops, it's really tough for them to stray from that because they're just like, maybe this person's right, but maybe on the other hand, they're just trying to work the system and I'm not going to let that happen, which in a way I kind of respect.
One of the worst things, and it was a big thing that you saw, is just like the individual inspector's interpretation of a lot or a little text wording.
Right.
And that can be infuriating because your interpretation might be completely different. Your logic as an experienced professional can bring you one place to be like, no, clearly this is what this says. And then they're just like, no, that's not what it says. It says what I think it says.
Right, yeah. Right. And what they see, you find yourself in the situation where it always means the thing that I can't possibly do, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, why does it have to mean that? Because that seems not fair. It's clearly not either of our first shops, right? We don't have a line of people that with like serious injury. you tend to look at our past histories. I'm confident that this will work out. I just think, right now I'm in the point of just like really hope that if you guys have questions about how this works, we can talk, because I have the experience, right? And I've worked on different committees in Michigan and, APP and stuff. Like, I'm not just trying to pull the wool over your eyes and do a shop that's trying to get away with stuff. I'm trying to exceed expectations.
I don't know if either of you have ever run into this, but I definitely ran into this in New Hampshire for a while. Like, right now I'm in a fortunate position because I'm on the advisory board for body art in my state, so I have a lot of access to the people who regulate body art. But before that, it was almost a hindrance to say that, this world-leading authority on body, or as I see it, this world-leading authority on body piercing safety, on body art safety, I just so happened to be a member and a board member and an instructor. And it almost like lessened my credibility because it seemed like I was just being like, here are the rules that I wrote for you to read,
right.
Not that I wrote it, but what I'm
sure,
saying is,
yeah.
it's more difficult to present this like peer-reviewed information as like, this is really reliable information. If you're like, yeah, and I help contribute to some of this information, it kind of removed a lot of my credibility in a way.
That's interesting. Yeah, I haven't had that exact experience that I know of, right? You know, maybe people...
It made it seem more self-serving.
Sure.
To their eyes.
Right, I could totally see that, yeah. I was guest piercing in another state, and the state, for whatever reason, had the rules where you had to go to the Department of Health for the state with all your paperwork. And I will never forget this experience. I brought them my paperwork with my check and all the stuff that they had asked for. I was like, here you go. I would like my temporary 2-day license, please. And the person that was looking at my bloodborne pathogens certificate, which was like,
did they see your name on it?
No, but thank God, because her response was, you could have photoshopped this. And she's like, it's literally always true about any document. Why are you even asking if your response to me is, you could have photoshopped this? That doesn't make any sense. You're just giving me a hard time for really no reasonable reason. Like, I'm gonna be here for 2 days. Mm-hmm. But this was just before I became president of the APP, and I was so thankful that my signature wasn't on my own bloodborne pathogens certificate.
Did you ever have a UK APP membership certificate that...
From me to me.
From you to you, yeah. As the president?
Yeah, it's my favorite. It looks so fake. Like, I have awarded this to myself.
Yeah, number one. Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you'd want to include, or do you want to maybe retouch on this in another...
The only thing I'd say is that if you're in the position where you want to talk to me about opening your own shop, I am happy to have that conversation after my new shop opens.
Yeah.
Until
Plus
that
maybe
happens,
1 to 3 months.
We'll see how it goes, right? If it happens in August, 1 to 3 months. If it happens in September or later, maybe a year.
Do you have... like, you know, one helpful piece of information that you could pluck out of maybe previous difficult experiences that you could share with people if they're maybe looking forward to opening a studio one day?
Pay for the things that you don't know or like to do.
Okay.
You know, if you get a lot out of graphic design and you really enjoy it, it's a passion of yours, by all means do your own logos, that sort of thing. But if you're new to that, if that's not a passion of yours, hire professionals, yeah. Right? I do not like accounting. I hire professionals. It is worth every penny because I don't, that the kind of bandwidth that you have to put into the stuff that you hate, it just makes it so much worse of an experience. You know, when people build their shops by hand because they're just like, yeah, I've been doing drywall since I was 12 with my old man. It's just like, that is great. But that is not me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've talked to you where you were putting in your own floors and stuff, and you're just like, do you like to do that? And I think your attitude is, I don't love it, but I know how to do it, so I can't pay someone else to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it, so I will always pay someone else to do it.
My first studio... I was fortunate enough to, I basically took over a studio that someone else had to abandon, essentially. They couldn't afford it, so I had a really fortunate scenario. I worked for them. They were like, I'm done. I'm leaving town. You can either just like help me lock the door and get everything out, or you can make a go of it. So I tried to make a go of it, and that's how I got started. Second studio was like my dad helping me put in floors and cabinets and painting and doing everything myself because I had no money to pay anyone else to do it. Third studio was, all right, that's it. I'm just gonna get the biggest business loan I can and I'm just gonna hire tradespeople to do it all. And I'm really happy I did because it looked so much easier and it took a little bit of the stress off of my brain. But I don't want to go through any of that again.
Yeah.
Me doing it or somebody else doing it.
It doesn't make it easy. It just makes it differently hard.
And it makes it look nicer in the end, too.
Like,
it makes you
a
broker. Is there anything that you want to share?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of nice moments, but that's what they are. They're moments, you know? So it's like you kind of have to hone in on them and recognize them when they're bringing you joy because there is... so many difficulties that come with opening up a small business if you don't have a lot of resources. And for me, it was little things like going to pick out the paint colors that we wanted, you know, and like really putting a lot of thought into those little things and deciding where we wanted to hang the plants and, you know, like just those kind of little things where it's a space that you're going to be basically living in full time, you know, like every working day you're going to be spending there. So thinking about the way that you want the place to look and how you want the space to feel and be received by people when they come in, that stuff that you can control. I really enjoyed doing that. And I think that that's why the space maybe feels a lot nicer, because we were able to put a lot more of that into it. But, you know, it's difficult for me to not be honest and pretend like it wasn't like the toughest 8 month period that I've ever worked, because I was working full time piercing whilst doing like the new shop. And
when you say doing the new shop, you were physically hands-on doing a lot of that labor.
Yeah. So it was like, it was a difficult period, and I just don't want to pretend that it wasn't. So it's, I don't want to be negative, but I also don't want to be dishonest about what that experience was like. I remember going to a class. It wasn't actually a class. It was a talk APP with Leo, I want to say Zeebol. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, from Mint.
Right. And it was about studio design, studio aesthetics, and he talked a lot in the class about how you shouldn't buy anything that's the wrong thing. Like, you need to stop buying the wrong thing, because that's what you do. You go out and you think, oh, I don't have exactly what I want, but I'll just buy this crappy ornament from TK Maxx or TJ Maxx, I think is the American one. And you do that so often, you end up with all this crap you don't need. And it's something that stuck with me the first time I opened Forest. And again, the second time is just, you know, editing. Do I need this thing? Is this thing going to fix a specific problem right now? If it's not, I don't need it. Because when things aren't going very well, there's that big need to like, well, maybe if I just buy a little thing, I can fix this problem. And it doesn't always work that way. So you have to practice extreme fiscal discipline. Like, I would be making jewelry orders with numbers so exact that it would be like, I don't have 5 quid to spare here. This needs to be exactly what I need and not a penny over. So I think practicing fiscal discipline is probably the biggest thing that helped me through that process.
Mm. Well, anything else that you two would like to include?
Thanks for having me on the podcast again.
Well, it's thanks for staying up to midnight after we just smashed all of the sushi in Zaragoza.
It's midnight, but it's 6:30 for us.
It's a good point.
Enough for Lola. What is it for you?
11.
11.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So she's a sleepy girl, but we're wide awake. Well, yeah, I think this will be a good place to leave it then. It's almost exactly 1 hour.
Fabulous.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us for another Piercing Wizard podcast from Zaragoza, Spain at the 2024 APPE conference. I have been Ryan. You can find my junk online at patreon.com/RyanPBA. Oh, also, I'm doing a webinar on Sunday, May 20th about bevel theory. You can sign up to that at RyanPBA.com if you're interested. And who are you, lovely lass?
My name is Lola Slider. And I am the owner, for better or for worse, of Forest 2, The Revenge, in Glasgow, Scotland, where you can come and get pierced by me or by my co-worker, Jordan, and bask in the ambience.
And you are a good sir.
Jeff Saunders, Fakir Musafar Intensives in San Francisco, California, Game of Piercing in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and soon to be Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Nice. All right, well, thanks for listening. Bye.
For more information about the show, visit piercingwizardpodcast.com or like Piercing Wizard Podcast on Facebook. For more info about your host, visit precisionbodyarts.com or search Ryan PBA on Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr. If you enjoy the show, you can subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcast, and Google Play. Music by Benny B. Blanco. Show copyright 2017, Precision Body Arts LLC, all rights reserved.
Okay. Yeah,
well,
stop.
What am I supposed to do with it then?
Put it on the shelf.
But what if I need it?
Then you pick it up and drink from it. Okay.
Seems right. I'm a big jerk. Let's see who that is.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to be a professional?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we are in Zaragoza, Spain.